All right, so the scripture today from the lectionary, we're continuing in Matthew, and it's Matthew 22, verse 34 through 46, and actually, I'm probably going to stop at verse 40. The context, right? Matthew 21, I've mentioned, Jesus has the triumphal entry, heading to Jerusalem, goes to the temple, whips folks out, makes the religious leaders upset. They begin to try to trap him. By what authority are you doing this? He counters with some questions about John the Baptist. We have the question about should we pay taxes and the issue of Caesar. That's in chapter 22, the chapter we're in today. They're trying to sort of get at Jesus now that they recognize he's come to Jerusalem and poses sort of this significant threat. And so this becomes another one of these moments, right? The Sadducees come to Jesus and try to trap him with a question about marriage. Will I be married in the afterlife, right? And Jesus sort of gives another clever response. And so, having silenced the Sadducees, the very next piece here of Matthew 22 is a new question. When the Pharisees heard that Jesus had left the Sadducees speechless, they met together. Again, conspiring, right? One of them, a legal expert, tested Jesus. Teacher, what is the greatest commandment in the law? Jesus replied, you must love the Lord your God with all your heart, with all your being, and with all of your mind. This is the first and greatest commandment, and the second is like it. You must love your neighbor as you love yourself. All the law and the prophets depend on these two commands. All right. So I'm going to start by telling a story, if you're all right with that. This is something at some point I'll probably unpack in a series, maybe when we're face to face, but I'll intro it now. So it's been a while, because I was on a plane, and I have not been on a plane in a while. And normally, so my MO, I'm kind of an introverted person outside of these contexts, and I get on a plane, and I like to sit by the window if I can, and I like to pretend that I'm asleep when everyone's getting on, because I don't want to talk to anybody, right? The last thing I want is to talk to a stranger for however long and then never see them again. Like, this is not my way. I'm just not a normal, bubbly person, right? Or I put on my headphones, right? That's like the universal sign of, don't like my headphones and I have a book or something. But I'm usually pretty antisocial on planes. In this particular situation, I can't remember why, but the person who sat next to me saw that I was reading a book, and it was a Christian book. And so they were like, oh, are you a Christian? And I said, yes, I teach at NNU, whatever, I pastor. And then I said, are you Christian? And they said, yes. And then we shared small talk, like where you go to church or whatever. And then I pretended to sleep, whatever, right, for the rest of the flight. But we did have some small talk. But here's the difficulty. I don't have a great answer for this. I wish I did. This is just the newest thing that keeps me up at night with like anxiety or insomnia or whatever, right? But I don't have any great solutions, but I do think we have to engage the problem. And that is this. I thought to myself, this person just told me they're a Christian, and I don't know anything about them because of that. I literally don't know anything about them. Saying you're Christian in the United States tells a person nothing about you. They don't know your politics, certainly. They don't know your ethics. They don't know your theology. You could have multiple wives and handle snakes and claim to be a Christian. You could be Mother Teresa and claim to be a Christian, right? I mean, Martin Luther King Jr. was a pastor and a Christian leader, and so was the leader of the Ku Klux Klan at that time, both a pastor and a Christian leader. I mean, I would put air quotes around that, But in their mind and in their followers' mind, they're a Christian, they're a leader. I mean, like, saying you're Christian, what does that even mean? Like, how does that identify any essential characteristic about us? There are Christians that think God controls every event, predestination. There are Christians that think God's controlling almost no event, free will. There are people in my family for which their Christian call is that God has established clear gender roles. Women should not be pastors. They should not teach men or have authority over men. Every day I go to school at NNU and I train female pastors for ministry. I am actively working against their theological worldview. I'm undermining it every day when I'm training female pastors. And yet they are lovely, wonderful Christian people. I respect them deeply. Saying you're Christian doesn't tell you anything about a person. And this is what I would call a significant identity crisis. This is a problem for the Christian church. We have no identity. Right? Like, if you think about a Jenga tower, and there are those blocks, like, you take blocks out one at a time, blocks, and eventually you take one out and the whole thing comes toppling over, right? It's really, I love it. It's so fun when my kids play. It just scatters everywhere, makes a giant noise. They don't clean it up. I'm like stepping on Jenga blocks for the next week. But the thing is, there are parts of the Jenga that are not necessary. We can take them out and it doesn't fall. Clearly, there are parts of the Christian worldview that are not necessary. I might hold them, but you don't have to hold them. That's okay. But then there are like necessary Jenga pieces that when you remove them, the whole thing topples over. And at some point, Christians have to begin thinking, what are those? Like, what are the things that give us our identity, our purpose, our sense of place? And I'm not sure what they are yet. I'm trying to figure this out. But we have a real identity problem. And so saying you're Christian shouldn't just mean anything. It should mean something. So a good place to start might be the place where Jesus says, this is the greatest commandment, and all of the law, that's like Exodus, Deuteronomy, Numbers, right, Leviticus, like five books, all of the law and all of the prophets, that's 18 more books of the Bible, all depend on this one law, this one principle. This might be the place to start as Christians. Let this be our identity. I'm not sure it always is. So let's not make creeds our identity. Let's not make a whole bunch of beliefs our identity. You check all of our boxes. Were you baptized? Were you dunked? Were you sprinkled? Do you believe that Jesus was divine by birth, divine by action? The Trinity, is it like water, you know, air and ice? Or is it like instead of having all of these check boxes, what if we started with like the Great Command in like a radical way? Like, we lived this out radically. That people, like, when I sat down next to someone and they said they were Christian, in my heart I would know that person loves God with everything they've got and they love their neighbor as they love themselves. If I knew that, I'd be happy, but I don't. Right? And they don't. So we're going to break into groups here. And I want to think about the Great Commandment for a minute. So here are my questions for you as you break out. One, what are the three elements of the Great Command? Two, which of those do you struggle with the most and why? Which is the hardest for you? We good with that? All right. We ready, Jen, to break up?
No, you need to make me a co-host. It's not to
can I,
the bottom of my screen.
I wonder if I can do it. I have no idea how to do it, though. So I'm going to go to you, and then I'm going to say, what do I say when I click on you?
Make me a co-host.
Yeah, that's not an option on the bubbles.
The three little dots on the top of my square?
No.
It should say, make me a co-host?
Nope. It's not an option for me. But you know what? We're just going to pivot right on the fly, right now. This is what we do at Colister. We pivot back to Joe. All right. So Let me say one thing briefly. Most people, even people raised in the church, this was my view for a long time, think there are two pieces, right? So the two pieces we all know is that you're supposed to love God and you're supposed to love your neighbor. The third piece that goes ignored is as yourself. Jesus assumes you love yourself, and that's what allows you to love your neighbor. So all three of these components are important, and I want to talk about all three with at least a little bit of detail. So I want to talk about loving God, loving self, loving neighbor from the mental or psychological perspective, and then from our actions, like what we actually do. I think both really, really matter. So one of the things that I want to highlight here is that Jesus says the first component is to love God with all of your heart, with all of your being, right? With all of your mind, with all of your strength. And this command is directly about idolatry. So we've talked about idolatry for 2 weeks prior, right? So for 2 weeks we've talked about this. We place things where God should go. They become the things of our ultimate concern. We put our hope and our faith in them. That's idolatry. I have all kinds of idols. Sometimes it's money. It's my own entertainment. It's my television that sits in front of me, my phone. I put all kinds of things ahead of my family, my wife, right? I put all kinds of things ahead of God. And Jesus is warning us against this. Now, this is significant. It's a little bit of a review, but I think it's significant. Love God first. Don't fall into idolatry. And what are the areas that Jesus has been addressing since he entered Jerusalem? The first was the temple courts and money. Don't make money an idol. Then it's Caesar. Don't make nationalism, right, an idol. Don't put that above the kingdom of God. Then the Sadducees come and talk about marriage, right? So not even marriage or family should go above God. These very common things that become idols, Jesus has addressed. We love God first. Part of this is the amount of time that I put hope into things that are not God, the amount of times I put faith into things that are not God, which is sort of this intellectual piece. But then there's also so much of my behavior, where I spend my money, my time, my energy. All of those actions suggest that God is often not first. This is not really what's shaping my life. That culture and politics and the news and social media and my anxiety and worry and all of those things are shaping me way more than the kingdom. So Jesus wants to remind us to reverse those priorities, right? We've talked about that some, so I want to spend more time looking at love of self and love of neighbor. And I want to talk about love of self because if we had our small groups, my guess is most of you would have said, you're terrible at this. So I want to start with your internal life. I want to start by suggesting that love of self means having compassion for yourself, that being human is super difficult, and that we're in a culture that says you can have it all and you can get everything done and you should be happy all the time because look at all the wealth that you have and comfort that you have and security that you have. The fact is I'm not happy all the time and I can't do it all, and being human is about failing daily and learning to breathe in and out grace for yourself and compassion for yourself. When you give up the illusion of being great and being awesome, and I just get to be Joe, then I'm starting to love myself. I'm starting to accept who I am. Not the vision of Joe that one day I will be, like, oh, tomorrow I'll wake up and then I'm going to be this person. I'm going to love the Joe that exists, not the one I've created in my mind that I'm supposed to be, right? So it starts, I think, with a kind of spiritual or internal view. How do I talk to myself? How do I think about myself? But it has to translate into actions. So loving yourself is not treat yourself. I showed that video once before where it's not just doing whatever you want Right? It's not just having a great time. Loving yourself is doing what you need. It means doing difficult things like treating your body well and trying to eat well and sleep well. It means forcing yourself at times to engage in relationships that are difficult, that help you to grow. It means engaging your spiritual life seriously. That is a form of self-love, to really take control and take charge of your spiritual growth. Whether it be reading a book or a prayer practice that you engage with, or getting out in nature, painting, writing poetry, writing music, feeding your soul, right? I think DJ is working hard at this. I often find it, I know he's hard on himself. I'm not even sure, I can't see his tile, but you know, he loves music. So he just recently recorded a bunch of music and sent it to me. And it was like, he took the time to love himself well by doing an activity that might feel selfish, but it's not. This fills his soul, right? This is what loving yourself means. So it's not just, it's like an internal set of concerns, and it's also a behavioral set that's really hard. Do difficult things in such a way that you deeply care for your own well-being, right? I love my children, and that means sort of forcing them to do things they might not otherwise want to do to make them better humans, right? That's part of loving them. And then the last component is this love of neighbor, right? So what would it look like for Christians to be defined by our love of God, number one, our love of ourselves in a deep, responsible, mature way, and then we showed that in radical demonstrations of love of neighbor. So I want you to take that same mental, psychological, spiritual perspective that you have for yourself, and what would it look like to take that and apply it to people? So think about the most difficult person in your life, like your boss or your coworker, your spouse, a child, your neighbor. We all have people in our lives that drive us crazy and that ruin our days and that we perseverate on. And what if you saw them and all human beings like people who are happy, well-adjusted, whole, stable? Don't act like this person, right? That's not how really successful, happy, loved people respond or act. Which means their behavior probably comes from feelings of fear and anger and anxiety. Their behavior probably stems from feeling like they're broken, lost, in the dark, chained. And if you see their behavior that way, then what comes up is not like a fierce animosity, but a softness. Like, it must be really hard to be them every day. It must be really hard to live with that perspective, to see the world the way they see it, to act that way and to hurt people and to alienate people. And I'm not saying that that makes it okay. Like, I'm not saying people should be able to treat you poorly. I'm saying you draw boundaries, you protect yourself against toxic people, and you can also have compassion for them. Like, there's a way to draw boundaries and establish distance and let people know that what they're doing isn't okay. And in your heart, your desire is that they change and not suffer, which is my desire often, right? Like, why can't they just suffer and know how insufferable they are? But if I can recognize that most of that time, they're reacting out of a place that's hurt and wounded and sinful and broken. When I do that, my heart is soft. And when my heart is soft, I can love even my enemy. The next step, I think, of course, is how do we love our neighbor in our actions? What does it look like in tangible ways? So I'm going to give two things to consider, two things to live out moving forward, okay? The first is Jen and the racial justice group talked and brainstormed and said, you know, we want to have a Love Your Neighbor Day. This is before we knew the lectionary passage, by the way, just to tell you how awesome the Holy Spirit is. They were doing this totally separate. And then I sent out the order of worship saying, hey, it's like the great commandment. And it was like, la, la, la. So that means this is divinely ordained and you have to do it. So they said, let's have a Love Your Neighbor Day and let's do it on Tuesday, November 3rd. I'm not sure why. I feel like something's happening on that day, but I don't know. Tuesday, November 3rd will no longer be just Election Day. It's going to be Love Your Neighbor Day because we're going to need a whole lot of love. So I'm going to be emailing out suggestions. I'm going to give you a few. So we have a Google Doc where we're just like typing in suggestions. So if you have any, send them my way, right? So Love Your Neighbor Day. Here are some things you might consider doing on that day, right? Number one, make some cookies and maybe leave them on the doorsteps of your neighbors, right? Donate blood. Call a few people that you haven't had contact with for a while to check in and say you love them. I did not write this one, but I do like it. Check in on your pastor. I'm doing all right, by the way. Give time, energy, money to a nonprofit. Maybe feed the homeless if you're comfortable in that environment. Or maybe donate to LEAP Charities or to the fire victims through the United Methodist Church. Buy coffee for the car or the person behind you. Rake up your neighbor's leaves without being asked, right? Just do it. Write a note. Put it on your neighbor's front porch. Stick it under their car windshield. Just letting them know you care about them. Make a meal for someone and deliver it. Hang a heart on your door, on your tree, on the neighbor's door, right? And Wendy Blickenstaff provided some images you might be able to use if you want to do that. Flood social media with Love Your Neighbor stuff on Nextdoor, Facebook, Instagram, Twitter. Positive, positive vibes. There's going to be a lot of anxiety and anger and fear. Email or text someone or 10 people, right? Something positive and encouraging. Go out of your way to smile with your eyes at 10 people that day, right? Strangers. Hang free lollipops from your tree so that the kids in the neighborhood can come grab them. Find ways to cultivate the heart of our Christian identity. Because our hope is not on what happens on November 3rd, and our faith is not there. We're here to be a light to the world, and salt to the world, and love for the world. So this is our chance, right, to be pushed to do some things to make sure we're spreading that love. Now, number two, for some of you, I get the sense that maybe God has been working on your heart for a while, and you're not sure what it's about. I just want to challenge some of you that maybe God has been active to say you're being called to something maybe more radical, right? A radical kind of love of other, of service to the church or to your work, to a local nonprofit. Maybe it's getting involved in things like just reentry programs for prisoners, or maybe your heart is housing, or maybe your heart is Collister and Taft Elementary. But God has been working on you, and I encourage you to submit to that, to like, here I am, Lord, send me, use me. That God is going to call you for the rest of your life. God will not stop calling you to new acts of love and service to the world. I know for me, before I became a pastor, God just wouldn't leave me alone. I just had this nagging, unceasing sense that there was more that God was asking for me, and I didn't know what it was. I had no idea. I just was like, okay, what's next? What's next? And then I got this random call that said, do you want to be pastor at Collister? It was weird, right? But I was trying to prepare myself for something. I didn't know what, because I wanted to say yes. And this is what I'm suggesting to all of you, that you prepare your heart to say yes to the ways in which God's calling you to love and serve your neighbor. So would you pray with me, and then we'll go to our closing song. Lord, Christians can't seem to agree on much. We say we're Christian, we're not sure even what that means sometimes. Christians think, act, believe totally different from us. What are we supposed to do about that? I feel alienated sometimes. I feel like, is Christianity the place I belong sometimes? There's so much difference, disagreement, diversity in the church. Help us to be unified around this commandment. To put you first, that's where our hope and our faith lie. To love ourselves well, to love ourselves deeply, to have compassion for ourselves. And to love our neighbor with that same grace, compassion, and fierce love. Let this be our defining call. Let this be our unifying principle. Let this be the thing we turn to over and over again when we doubt, when we're afraid, when we're angry. We love you, Lord, and we're so grateful. Amen. If you would please now join our final song.